I love my calendar cat.
You know you want to know a secret? I know how you could get some free stuff. Do you like free stuff like me? If you listen to this entire recording at the end, Snyder will tell you how to get something you want free. Oh, but don't tell him I told you so, okay?
You are about to experience Jackson Snyder Presents. Direct from the Veroesi Nyahad, a Hebrew Nation radio original program. JSP is a variety show seeking out Jewish and Christian origins, religion, theology, and history, and doing so in a fashion that is both educational and entertaining. Welcome to Jackson Snyder Presents.
I found for you a great essay on the 364-day year in the Dead Sea Scrolls and Jewish pseudepigrapha by Jonathan Ben Dove. That's from the book Calendars and Years 2, Astronomy and Time in the Ancient and Medieval World. This article is a soup to nuts. It's got just about everything in it, and enough of everything in order to give us a pretty darn good idea of the importance of this calendar. By the way, we call it the Zadokite calendar or the Davidic calendar. Here's the beginning of the article. The Dead Sea Scrolls are a corpus of ancient Jewish writings discovered on the shores of the Dead Sea in caves near the site of Qumran. The scrolls were written between approximately 200 BC and 68 AD. They belong to the period marked in Jewish history as the Second Temple period, which is circa 515 BC to 70 AD. Many of the scrolls are copies of earlier material, most notably books of the Hebrew Bible, while other compositions preserved in the scrolls were written closer in time to the copies found at Qumran, and thus reflect the interests and ideology of a Jewish society in the early Roman period. Some scrolls constitute copies of the pseudepigrapha, that is, Jewish writings with an apocalyptic background that were not preserved as part of scripture, but circulated as extraneous books. Some of these writings were preserved through later periods of time while being transmitted in various translations, such as Greek, Latin, Syriac, and ancient Ethiopic, that is, Geaz. A final and significant part of the scrolls corpus represents the writings of a unique Jewish sect who settled at Qumran and whose scribes produced a great amount of written documents reflecting the ideology and practice of the sect. According to the prevalent theory, it was this group called the Yahad who ultimately hid the scrolls in the caves near Qumran. And I might add, that's where we get the name of our organization, Yahad. Like the sectarian writings from Qumran, many pseudepigrapha attest to a belief in a select group of inspired people and its separation from the rest of the nation. Many other themes, including the calendar, are common to the two textual corpora. However, the sectarian ideology and practice didn't reach full implementation in the pseudepigrapha, while in the sectarian scrolls, they're fully fledged. Now I'm kind of bugged by this already. The author or editor didn't spell pseudepigrapha correctly. What other little mysteries will we solve? The two main pseudepigrapha to be discussed here are the Book of First Enoch, especially the astronomical section in chapters 72 to 82, and the Book of Jubilees. The Book of Enoch, or First Enoch, also called Ethiopic Enoch on account of its preservation in Ethiopic culture, is a collection of Jewish apocalyptic writings, mostly written around the 2nd century BC. Enoch, a biblical figure from antediluvian times, is depicted in the post-biblical apocalyptic literature as the founder of human civilization and transmitter of science and writing to humanity. While fragments of the Aramaic Enochic writings were found at Qumran, and fragments of a Greek translation surfaced elsewhere, a full version of the Book of First Enoch only exists in Ethiopic translation. The astronomical book is considered the earliest part of the work, possibly as early as 3rd century BC, although its final literary form is probably later. The Book of Jubilees takes the form of a retelling of biblical history in apocalyptic spirit, from the creation until the encounter of God and Moses on Mount Sinai. The book was written in Hebrew around the middle of the 2nd century BC. As is the case of 1st Enoch, fragments of the original were found at Qumran and in various translations, but the entire book was preserved and transmitted only in Ethiopic. Among the many fields of interest represented in the sectarian scrolls, such as Bible interpretation, prayer, sectarian law, visionary literature, etc., a group of calendrical documents takes pride of place. The apocalyptic calendar tradition began already in the pseudepigraphical, spelled correctly that time, astronomical book, and continued in various trajectories in the scrolls written by the Yahad and preserved in the cave. This calendrical tradition, as well as the astronomical premises underlying it, is the topic of the present article. Scholarly discussion on the calendar of the Yahad community interfaces with a wider discussion of other calendars, like the lunisolar calendar, that later became what is now called the Jewish calendar, as well as calendars in use by surrounding people, calendars from Mesopotamia and Greece. The lunisolar calendars used throughout the ancient Near East in Persian and Hellenistic times, as well as Ptolemaic Egyptian calendars. Against the background of all these, the central distinguishing feature of the Qumranic tradition is the number of 364 days in the year. In the hands of different Jewish authors throughout a period of no less than 200 years, the number 364 served as a basic theme and a ground for variation, culminating in the creation of a rich calendrical tradition. This number, acquiring various elaborations over the generations, was transformed into the focal point of a wide-ranging and sophisticated creativity. Although not based on a particularly advanced astronomical knowledge, this calendar tradition stands out among the other ancient calendars in its ability to absorb a wide variety of temporal and religious parameters in an extraordinarily elaborate matrix. I would say an extraordinarily simple matrix. It's by far the easiest calendar that I know of to follow and to write up. Most of these parameters will be discussed below, excluding the Jewish cultic festivals, which will not be surveyed here in detail. 1. Textual sources attesting to the 364-day year. And here are the sources, and I quote, "The moon brings about the years precisely all according to their eternal positions. They come neither early nor late by one day, by which they would change. Each is exactly 364 days," unquote. This is from 1 Enoch 74:12. See also 75:2, 82:6. 82:11-20, circa 2nd to 3rd centuries B.C. Second, quote, "And you command the people of Israel that they observe the years according to the number of 364 days," unquote. Jubilees 6:32, see also verses 23-38, 2nd century B.C. Next point, quote, "And he," that is King David, "wrote Psalms 3600, songs to sing before the altar accompanying the daily perpetual burnt offering for all the days of the year, 364. That's in the Psalm scroll, 11:5-27, 4-7. Copy dated to the 1st century AD, but probably authored earlier. Next point, quote, "The year is complete, 364 days, unquote. That's from the 4QMMT Halakhic Letter, or Miksat Ma'asa Torah, 4Q394, fragments 3 through 7, circa 2nd to 1st centuries BC. Also, there is the similar wording from Enoch 82:6. Thus, a year of 364 days is completed. Next point, quote, on that day, Noah went out from the ark at the end of an exact year, 364 days, unquote. It's from the commentary on Genesis, A, 4Q252, second column, 2 through 3, circa 1st century BC. In addition to these explicit mentions of the 364-day year, it's attested less directly in a variety of other sources. After its first appearance in the astronomical section of 1st Enoch, again chapters 72 through 82, the 364-day year is also known from, or at least implied in, another composition of roughly the same period, the Aramaic Levi document, which is probably also the 3rd century BC, as well as from the somewhat later Book of Jubilees, and from a wide range of other compositions from Qumran, whose dating varies between the end of the 2nd century BC and the mid-1st century AD. The sources related to the 364-day calendar tradition can be divided into a number of categories. Category A, astronomical documents which track the movement of the luminaries using scientific models but do not apply their data to a practical calendar, such as the Astronomical Book of Enoch and the scroll 4Q317, Phases of the Moon. B. Calendrical documents, writings of a technical nature and limited vocabulary, which relate to various aspects of the religious calendar. And that's what we're interested in. C. Compositions giving indirect evidence of the calendar. These compositions were not intended to transmit a detailed calendar, and most don't even mention the number 364. However, their content is based on the characteristic calendar of the Yahad, and each one of them contains elements characteristic of the 364-day calendar tradition. The present article will not cover all oblique reference to the calendar. The more prominent texts discussed below are first, rewritten scripture with a chronological emphasis, such as sections from the Aramaic Levi document, the Book of Jubilees, 4Q252, commentary on Genesis, A. Point 2, a legal composition which deals with the cycle of festival days, the Temple Scroll. 3. Liturgical compositions for various days of the year, 11Q Psalms A, Psalm Scroll Column 27, and 4Q503, Daily Prayers, the Song of the Seasons in 1Q Serek 10, Songs of the Sabbath Sacrifice, and various prayers for the festivals. And fourth, polemic statements about the calendar as a key religious and sectarian practice in such foundational documents as the Damascus document and the Peshur literature, etc. The 364-day calendar tradition has undergone considerable development, combining mathematical astronomical concepts with a calendar perfectly integrated with the religious life of the Yahad community. While this development calls for a heavy diachronic analysis, the entire 364-day calendar tradition retains persistent characteristic features when viewed from a synchronic perspective. Next section, the 364-day year general characteristics. More than any astronomical aspect, the 364-day year is characterized by its numerical harmony. In fact, the best definition for the year is neither a solar nor lunisolar year, but rather a seven-base, that is a septenary, schematic year. This definition gives the best account for most manifestations of this sectarian reckoning. The year ideally begins in the spring equinox. It's divided symmetrically into a hierarchical order of time periods. The hierarchical dimensions emphasized quite strongly in the textual sources, which we already went over. The sources underline the division of the year into 52 weeks and hence into four quarters of 13 weeks or 91 days each. The quarters are sometimes designated by the term tekufa, season, period, or maybe more accurately, solstice or equinox. The division into weeks proves especially useful for liturgical means, like 11 QPS A, 27, or Songs of the Sabbath Sacrifice. The order of prayers for the service of the Sabbath sacrifice was composed on this basis, containing 13 prayers according to the count of the Sabbaths in the quarter. I wish we had all those. Other sources give priority to the division of the year into months. Each quarter comprises 3 months whose days number 30, 30, and 31. The scroll 6Q17 neatly transmits this order of months in the following words, and I quote, "The first month, in it 30 days. The second month, in it 30 days. The third month, in it 31 days. And completed are the days of the quarter." See also 1 Enoch chapter 72 and following. Now, since the 364-day year originated from the ideal 360-day year, which consists solely of schematic 30-day months, some ancient Jewish writers were reluctant to create a 31-day month and instead counted the last or 91st day of the quarter as an additional day. And I'd like to stress, some of them, I do not. The fourfold division of the year, most probably borrowed from the Mesopotamian pattern, was well absorbed in Jewish tradition, as it is attested not only in the sectarian 364-day calendar tradition, but also in the later rabbinic texts and mosaics from the late Roman period. The Tekufot are marked by the sun's cardinal points, with each solstice and equinox date standing at the conclusion or sometimes at the beginning of every quarter. These four added days, sometimes called epigomenal days, after the practice of the Egyptian civil year, one in each quarter, constitutes the differences between the ideal year of 360 days and the distinctive 364-day year. The emphasis on solar movements and the seasons of the year, at least in the ideal level, is an important characteristic of the 364-day calendar tradition. The 364-day year contains 12 schematic months. The months are named neither by Canaanite names, known from the Bible, such as Ziv, Bul, Ethanim, nor by the Babylonian Aramaic names absorbed into later biblical books and into Jewish practice, such as Tishri, Marcheshwan, etc. Instead, they are numbered according to their order in the year. The first month, the second month, etc., etc., similar to the mode of designation in priestly layers of the Pentateuch, such as the laws concerning the festivals in Leviticus 23 and Numbers 28 and 29. My thought on that is that these people were very sensitive about using the names of foreign and pagan Elohim. They would not even utter their name, even if it was only in using the month's name. The neat division of the year into 52 weeks had great value in the Jewish culture, where, since biblical times, the number 7 has been considered sacred. Some priestly circles in the Second Temple period cherished the 7-based, or septenary, count as a generative principle in producing new temporal frameworks, laying special emphasis on full weeks, that is, Sunday, to Sabbath. Sunday is always the first day. Rather than on nominal weeks of 7 days, the septenary character of the 364-day years, that is, the system of 7, in other words, was a central reason for its acceptance in Jewish circles after its first introduction by way of the astronomical book. And that's one of the sections of what we call First Enoch now. In this respect, the 364-day year is greatly advantaged with regard to the standard Jewish lunisolar calendar, in which the number of days in the year is ever-changing with observation and the needs of intercalation. In the 364-day year, it's impossible for a day of feast to fall on the Sabbath day, an occurrence that would cause great confusion with regard to the correct procedures in the temple. and which in fact bothered the rabbinical legal experts quite considerably. Qumran compositions make excessive use of septenary counts. Thus, for example, the space of 7 weeks between the various festivals of first fruits in the Temple Scroll, columns 18 through 23, fits perfectly within the heptadic structure of the year. Heptad, 7. Above all, this structure is recognized in the corpus of Mishmarot documents, that is, rosters of the terms of service of the priestly families in the temple, which we'll talk about later on. These rosters divide the year into terms of service of 1 week, constructing a 6-year cycle for the assignment of an equal share of service for all 24 priestly families. Example, 24 priestly courses times 13 weeks of service equals 2,184 days, which equals 6 years, that is 2,184 days, which is equal to 6 years times 364. Look, I can't read this part very well, so maybe I'll figure that out later. Let me say it again. 24 priestly courses times 13 weeks of service equals 2,184 days, which further equals 6 years, and then it's got a time sign and 364. I don't know what that's doing in there. Owing to the fact that the number 364 divides neatly into 7, and since the day of the week in which the beginning of the year falls is fixed, all the dates, festivals, etc., in the year will wittingly occur in the very same day of the week. Maybe you heard some other 364 calendar essays that I read to you or composed for you. In various places, it's called the perfect calendar. I wonder, why don't these people catch on? Various lists of priestly courses, henceforth known as Mishmarot, fix the beginning of the year on the 4th day of the week, the day of the creation of the luminaries. For example, and I quote, ... it's light on the 4th day of the week, ... the creation on the 4th day. The text for that is 4Q 3:19, column 4, verses 10 and 11, and several others. So do you get that? They start their year on a Wednesday. That would be the Wednesday after the Sunday after the equinox, not on the equinox. If the equinox falls, say, on Wednesday, you go to the next Sunday, which is the first day of the week, and then you go out to the 4th day to start your year on Wednesday. The days of the week on which the festivals occur are counted in great detail in 4Q 3:20, column 4, 3 through 6, as well as in other similar lists. Several other compositions not directly connected with the priestly courses are also based on the perpetual order of the days of the week, like 4Q 3:17, 4Q 2:52, and 4Q 5:03. It's too bad that we just don't know the actual names of these Qumran texts. It's hard to relate to the sigillums that we're using here. It thus seems that the 364-day calendar tradition put significant emphasis on the days of the week, long before this element became central in other Jewish calendrical systems. It's doubtful, however, whether this was also the case in the earlier phases of the 364-day calendar tradition, such as 1st Enoch and the Book of Jubilees, which do not emphasize the days of the week in the calendrical framework. The closest one I think that does, it may, but there's lacunae there, is 4QMMT, first part. If you ever want to look at that, that's what I look at when people ask me questions about it. Then we have a table that represents what I just explained here, and I will try to put that table somewhere where you can see it, at least on the YouTube version of this. An inspection of the table reveals the great numerical possibilities innate with the 364-day year. The structure of the days, weeks, and months in each of the quarters retains an essential symmetry according to the position of the quarter. Thus, each month is identical to the other similarly situated months in the other quarters of the year.
You may contact us at Jackson Snyder Presents at this email address, veroyahad@gmail.com. That is VeroYahad at gmail.com. And let me remind you, you are listening to Jackson Snyder Presents with your host tonight, Bogdan G. Shrumkov. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. Jackson Snyder Present is back. Join us now for more of this interesting discussion.
The first month in each quarter, thus also the first month of the year, begins on a Wednesday and ends on a Thursday. The second month begins on a Friday and ends on Shabbat. And the last month of each quarter, which has 31 days, begins on a Sunday and ends on a Tuesday. The length of each quarter is 12 full weeks and another 2 half weeks, in total 13 weeks. The festival of unleavened bread, Matzot, 15th of the first month, constantly falls on the fourth day of the week, always on Wednesday, whereas Passover, which is the preparation day, is always going to be on a Tuesday. And so does the Festival of Tabernacles, Sukkot, on the 15th day of the seventh month. And you might note there also the Tuesday is the preparation day for the first day of the feast. The first day of the first month, that is ideally the spring new year, also occurs on a Wednesday, and thus also the day of remembrance on the first of the seventh month, that is ideally the autumn new year. We must be talking about Yom Teruah there, the day of awe. The table that I just mentioned enables one to reconstruct the layout of a complete month on the basis of the brief data for one day alone by dint of its perfect symmetry. I don't know the word dint. D-I-N-T. This elegant structure can be carried out even further when one goes beyond the bounds of 1 year to a cycle of 3 or 6 years, and when the Mishmarot are integrated into the yearly calendar. The introduction of additional numerical moduli, 24 courses, 6 years, 7 weeks, 13 weeks and a quarter, into the matrix allows for an enormous amount of arithmetical possibilities to be represented in the overall calendrical scheme. One calendrical document, 4Q319, goes even further when calculating Mishmarot and lunar phenomena along a cycle of 6 jubilees. That's 6 times 49 as a jubilee equals 294 years, a system which exemplifies how much calendar experts of this tradition cherish the numerical harmony innate with it. And at this point, we shall end the 364-day calendar. Until next time, lot more to come of this. We're on page 11 out of 65. So we're about a sixth of the way through. Now that we've got all this introductory material out of the way, brother, sister, I want to bless you. I have a deluxe PDF of the calendar for 21 to 22. It just virtually shows you everything and explains everything. Yes, it comes from Brother Norman Gray. But look, I'd like to give you one, free of charge, of course, but I don't know who you are. Drop me a line. Just ask me for the calendar at yahad.me, yahad.me. Yeah, go out there. It's just a form. Fill it out. Tell me what you want. Calendar. If you want this article, that's fine. I've got probably 15 articles on this calendar if you're one of those calendar nuts or a calendar cat. Take advantage of it. Get on the right calendar, for crying out loud. You know in your heart the moon has nothing to do with this. Not only that, but if you're looking at Genesis 1 or any other place in the Torah concerning moon calendars, the word new moon, well, if you look at the Hebrew, moon is not in there anyplace. It simply says new. And it's not talking about moons, it's talking about months. Let go of your superstition. Come on over with us to the wild side here. You'll want to know when your feasts are coming up, on the right schedule, on the true and the earliest schedule, the old temple schedule, which Jews, Hebrew roots, Messianic Jews all have wrong. We have found out now what that early temple calendar is. Write your doctrine in pencil so when the time comes for you to learn something new, you can erase it and write over it. This is your old friend, Jackson Snyder. Jackson Snyder presents for the Vero Essen Yahad and Hebrew Nation Radio. Be looking for part two.
I love my calendar.
You have been listening to Jackson Snyder Presents on Hebrew Nation Radio.
How hokey is that? With the problems that we have with free speech these days, I just don't know if we get by with a calendar cat sound effect. Next thing you know, the truth czar will be down here checking it out. If there is any cat that is interested in calendar, and we get censored after that by government, by Twitter, Facebook, Goggle, and Ginger. Yes, it's coming to that. But while we still have some freedom in this area, I give you part two of the 364-day calendar project essay from Jonathan Ben Dove, along with comments by your brother, Jackson Snyder. Now, I'll be back with you at the end of this recording. In the meantime, I have to go clean my gun. I'll let you know how it comes out.
About to experience Jackson Snyder Presents, direct from the Vero Essen Yahad, a Hebrew Nation Radio original program. JSP is a variety show seeking out Jewish and Christian origins, religion, theology, and history, and doing so in a fashion that is both educational and entertaining. Welcome to Jackson Snyder Presents.
Let us get into part two of the 364-day calendar project by Jonathan Ben Dove, and I'm going to start right in where I left off last time. This is an important part. Calendrical disputes in the Second Temple period. From the very outset, the evidence for the 364-day year was involved in disputes with other calendrical traditions. The polemics involve, in most cases, the rival lunisolar calendar tradition, which was current then in Judah, as in many other kingdoms of the Hellenistic Levant. As pointed out above, the 364-day year was distinct from the lunisolar calendar inasmuch as it allowed for all time periods to be pre-calculated based on an eternal, divine scheme. The lunisolar calendar, in contrast, was ever based on ad hoc observations of the moon and intercalations, depending on the astronomical circumstances and the whims of the responsible authority. My understanding from the very first, when I started studying this topic several years ago, was that the lunisolar calendar was the calendar of the Sadducees, and the Sadducees had, of course, usurped the authority of the temple sometime around 175 BC. At least three calendars were being used in the first century. You would use a calendar depending on which sect you were a part of. The Sadducees had the lunisolar, the Pharisees had the Persian moon calendar, and the Enochians, Essenes, Nazarenes, and all the other sects involved with the Messianic movement were on the 364-day solar calendar, because that was the original calendar in the temple and tabernacle. Now, I didn't make that up. You can read that much in the Dictionary of Judaism, of all places. Continuing on, in accordance with their apocalyptic orientation, the adherents of the 364-day calendar tradition condemned the human involvement in calendrical matters practiced by their rivals. The rabbinic tradition, in contrast, underscored the conspicuous human involvement in calendar reckoning and its ad hoc determination. Ad hoc means on the fly, as can be seen in the Mishnah tractate Rosh Hashanah and in later rabbinic sources. This disagreement seems to have begun in the early stages of the 2nd century BC, exactly. Prior to the rise of that polemic, at a stage in which the 364-day calendar tradition was only preliminarily distinct from its ancestor, the 360-day ideal year, some of its practitioners made sure to turn their zeal against those who did not count the 4 additional days within the year. That would be the 3rd, 6th, 9th, and 12th month last day. And I quote, "People err regarding them," that is the 4 additional days, "and do not calculate them in the numbering of the entire world because they err regarding them and people do not understand them precisely." That's according to 1 Enoch 82:5. See also 75:2. It seems, however, that this polemic did not last long, or that a 360-day year was never actually practiced in Judah. Surprise, surprise. Returning now to the more well-attested polemics with the lunisolar tradition, one recognizes it most clearly in Jubilees and in Qumran literature, even in writings that are not patently calendrical. Here's a quote from sacred literature. "Commend the sons of Israel to observe the years according to this reckoning, 364 days, and these shall make up a complete year. But if they neglect the proper order and fail to observe them, then all the seasons will get out of order and the sequence of the year will be disturbed. Yet all the sons of Israel will forget and be ignorant of the progression of the years. They will forget the new months and festival and Sabbath." That's from Jubilees 6:32-38. See also 23:19. Now, similar words are used by the writer of 4Q Pesher, Hosea. "I will put an end to all of her joy, her pilgrimages, new moons, Sabbaths, and all her sacred days." This means that all the sacred days they will take away in exchange for Gentile sacred days, so that all her joy will be turned into mourning. 4Q 166, second column, 14-17. That's exactly what the Sadducees and Pharisees did. They exchanged the temple calendar for the Greek calendar and the Persian calendar, or Parthian calendar. And we go now to the Habakkuk Pesher. The controversy appears to be the description of an historical incident. This, that is a scripture verse quoted earlier, refers to the wicked priest who pursued the teacher of righteousness to destroy him in the heat of his anger at his place of exile. At the time set aside for the repose of the Day of Atonement, he appeared to them to destroy them and to bring them to ruin on the fast day, a Sabbath intended for their repose. 1Q Pesher Habakkuk 11:4-8. The Yahad community members preserved in their historical memory a Day of Atonement, according to their reckoning, on which the evil priest came out from Jerusalem to pursue the teacher of righteousness in the desert. The background of this enmity must have been the calendrical controversy concerning the actual date of the Day of Atonement. For otherwise, how could the high priest in Jerusalem be free from his many duties in the temple to go out to the desert on this holy day? Additional documents of the Yahad enumerate calendrical disagreements as a decisive cause of their dispute with the rest of Israel. Accordingly, in the Damascus document, and we quote, "With those remaining of the ones who held the commandments of Elohim, he established his covenant," lacuna, "to reveal to them the hidden things," lacuna, "holy Sabbaths and honorable festivals," CD, column 3, 12-15. Continuing, and all who were brought into the covenant without coming to the temple to lighten my altar without cause, lacuna, if they do not keep the law exactly, lacuna, to differentiate between the sacred and the profane and to keep the Sabbath day as interpreted and the festivals and the Day of Atonement. CD 6, 11 through 19, see also 4Q 266, 2, 2 through 6. The special interest of Jewish authors with the chronology of biblical times intercepted with the above noted calendar polemics. The most pronounced point of disagreement involved the chronology of the biblical flood, Genesis 6 through 9, no doubt because the flood chronology appears to be based on a 364-day year, at least according to some of the ancient versions. Thus, in 1 Enoch 106:15, we read, "And there will be great wrath upon the earth, and a flood, and there will be great destruction for a year." In the Masoretic version of Genesis, the flood lasted for a complete year plus 10 days, according to Genesis 7:11 and 8:14, a number that readily suggests the 354-day lunar year plus an epoch of 10 days, total equaling 364 days. However, other versions allow for more ambiguous conclusion. According to the Greek version, that is, the Septuagint, the flood lasted exactly 1 year, leaving open the question what kind of year it is that Scripture relates to in this case. The scroll 4Q 252, a Qumranic commentary on Genesis, states that the flood lasted for one complete year of exactly 364 days, although this figure requires some modifications of the biblical text. Finally, in Jubilees chapter 5, the biblical dates are even further manipulated to account for more than one of the contrasting versions at the same time. Yes, because there's two stories there concerning the flood. It would appear that the inclusion of a calendrical list at the beginning of the scroll of 4Q 394, which contains the polemic composition 4QMMT, the halakhic letter or the miksat Maasa HaTorah, some of the works of the law, is connected with the author's contention that the calendar is a central cause for the dispute, which is vividly depicted in that treatise on religious law, speaking of 4QMMT. Indeed, calendrical disagreement would be highly significant in Judea, a land in which worship was conducted by definition at one central temple only. Any sort of tolerance towards conflicting calendrical traditions would necessarily entail an unbearable chaos in the temple schedule and is therefore impossible. Not so impossible, actually. We read about James the Just going into the Holy of Holies on that particular day, and he certainly couldn't have gone in on the same day that the Sadducees had Yom Kippur. The upshot is that James was on a different calendar. Going on, for this reason, statements of calendrical polemic most often involve the danger of profaning the religious festival. See the quotations from the Damascus Covenant above. Next, the early history of the Jewish 364-day calendar in Judea. In a series of scholarly articles from 1953 to 1957, Annie Jaubert analyzed the dates appearing in Jubilees, comparing them with the dates arising from the priestly sources in the Hebrew Bible, which predate Jubilees by three centuries or so, putting great emphasis on the days of the week as a factor in the priestly calendar and based on the structure of the 364-day year. Her surprising conclusion was that the calendar of Jubilees was identical to that which stood behind priestly sources in the Pentateuch, that is the Tanakh, such as the list of the journeys of the Israelites in the book of Numbers as well as behind other texts from the late books of the Hebrew Bible, that is, around the 6th century B.C. Joubert discovered that the biblical narratives could be interpreted to show, for example, that the Israelites abstained from travel on the Sabbath day. During the 1950s, preliminary publication of the first scrolls unearthed at Qumran revealed a surprising similarity between the Qumran calendars and those calendars previously studied by Joubert. Accordingly, Joubert maintained that the Qumranic 364-day calendar tradition had very early origins in Jewish antiquity, and that the 364-day year was put to practice in the Jerusalem temple for the first few centuries after its restoration in the late 6th century. She claimed that the lunisolar calendar, later adopted also by the rabbis, gained hold in Jerusalem only gradually in the Hellenistic period. And I would say that's because that was the market calendar of Greece. And those of the temple wanted to augment their riches through Greek markets, and that's why they took on the Greek calendar, lunisolar. That's my idea, anyway. Vanderkam, in 2000, correlated parts of Joubert's theory while going even further by connecting the introduction of the lunisolar calendar in the Jerusalem temple with the admittedly ambiguous statement on calendar reforms performed by Antiochus IV Epiphanes in Jerusalem from Daniel 7 and 25. In an earlier calendrical essay, I shared quite a bit of what Vanderkam had to say about this calendar, primarily because he is one of the primary scholars of this calendar. If you go back on some of the events that I have put up here and there on podcasting and in YouTube, you can hear at least one, maybe two, of Vanderkam's essays on the subject. I consider him the expert. According to this reasoning, going on, the Yahad community members retained the antique Jewish calendar of 364 days, while opposing the Pharisaic circles who had adopted Antiochus' pagan calendar. This is again why the Yahad, how could we possibly call it the Yahad if we were using any other calendar but the Yahad calendar, the earliest calendar we know of, and the calendar that lines up with the Dead Sea Scrolls, Jubilees, Enoch, and Daniel, and the Gospel of John. Insomuch as Joubert's argument with regard to the dates in the Pentateuch rests on a rather equivocal statistic analysis of her database, it's impossible to determine whether her conclusions are valid. It would be fair to say that they are possible, but not necessarily in any case. There is no positive proof for the existence of a 364-day calendar tradition in Judah prior to the astronomical book. That's primarily because there was nothing before the astronomical book. The Persian and early Hellenistic periods in this region are so shrouded in obscurity that it's difficult to determine the development of liturgical institutions in practice during this time. If someone could be learned from the general history of the early Hellenistic period, it's that small kingdoms in the Levant usually practiced the lunisolar calendar of Babylon, the Persian Empire, and the Seleucids, that's the Parthian, with minor local modifications. It's hard to conceive that the lunisolar calendar was only introduced in Jerusalem in the 2nd century B.C. And aside, whether it's hard to conceive or not, there's plenty of evidence that that calendar was introduced or reintroduced at the assassination of Onias III, the last of the Zadokite priests. And I think that happened about 171 B.C. It seems that the 364-day year is thus a product of the Hellenistic period. Indeed, some distinct elements of what later became the 364-day calendar tradition may be traced in earlier sources. Look, the Hellenistic period began about 300 BC with Alexander the Great, and you know, the Levant or Palestine or Israel, whatever you want to call it, South Syria, came under the influence of the Greeks shortly after 300 BC and continued on for at least 240 years up till the Roman conquest. My land, we are out of time, but we'll continue this lecture on the 364-day solar calendar in the next episode of Jackson Snyder Presents, produced by the Vero Assinya Hod, a Hebrew Nation Radio original. Be blessed. Until then.
You have been listening to Jackson Snyder Presents on Hebrew Nation Radio.